We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, another win for the Nets. 8 straight road wins. And tonight it was over the Pacers, 124-115. How are we feeling after this one? Or should I say, what's popping, Jack, in the words of the great Nick Claxton?
What's popping? Brand new. Look. So I've got a new song, a remix of Clack City now. Take me down to the Claxton City where the grass is green and the girls are pretty. That's a rip for those Guns N' Roses fans out there. It's a take on Paradise City, but it's Claxton City because I'm in paradise watching this dude play, my dude.
Jack, you're an artist out here. You're hitting different genres on the buzz, you know, bringing that different element to the show. Plenty to talk about today. A great win for the Nets. As always, you can find the buzz on all streaming platforms. But Jack, where do you want to start with this one?
I think the place to start is the first quarter. The Nets were really lackadaisical. They had like a 15-point deficit at that sort of point. Where was it going wrong in that first period?
Yeah, I think a lot of things went wrong. I think the Nets' effort level to start the game wasn't very good. A couple mental mistakes early on. And I think the combination of Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan, the starting lineup, just was kind of exposed a little bit in this one. DJ didn't play well. Bruce Brown just really struggled with his floater in this game. And Landry Shamet didn't feel aggressive enough. So just that unit overall didn't start the game with good energy, and they just didn't play well. And sometimes that's tough to just get over the hump. And I think, you know, Steve Nash made adjustments later in the game that really helped the Nets win this one.
The lineup change to put Landry Shamet in with the starters really increased that spacing, and Jeff Green come off the bench. What did you think of that decision?
You know, I didn't hate the decision. I think the problem still is, though, which we've talked about on previous shows, is just that spacing of Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan, especially if Brown's not hitting his floater. And he's kind of struggled in the second half of the season, these last few games, just missing shots that we typically saw him make almost, you know, automatic early in the year. So if Bruce Brown's not hitting that floater, it's really hard for the Nets to generate offense at times because they can stick to those shooters. And it really only takes like a guy and a half to defend DJ and Bruce Brown because they're so limited offensively with their spacing.
Yeah, and look, I still in the game, parts of the game that I was lucky enough to watch, I still think Bruce Brown, despite being negative 12 out there and 3 of 10 from the field, did get to the line six times, Nick. I think his aggression was still good, and that shot is going to fall. It's like James Harden with that three-point shot. Yep. You know, it's only 2 of 9 tonight. I'm still confident in what he has done and what he's produced previously, in that I think, like you alluded to, it's a carbon copy of what we said on previous podcasts. Bruce Brown and DJ can't be on the floor together. There were times tonight where Bruce Brown was using some of his point guard skills, giving, throwing some lobs to DJ and stuff, and it was like, okay, maybe this can work. But ultimately, it's either going to be Jeff Green or it's got to be Clax, because They just provide so much more balance and cohesion on both ends of the floor for those units. And again, the backups again stood up, Nick. But yeah, I think once you see the balance provided and Steve Nash being a bit more proactive with his lineups rather than reactive, as we saw in the sort of first periods with those rotations and such, that's when good things happen for this team.
Yeah, and I think the switching with Jeff Green and Nick Claxton was so much more efficient than the switching we saw with Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan. At times, DJ didn't switch, or if he did, he just didn't really have the juice tonight. And I thought Claxton, you know, I mentioned to you in the DMs, just was really, really good on ball in this game. I thought, you know, this was an elite game from him in terms of on-ball defense, locking up Caris LeVert a couple times, you know, locked up TJ McConnell, who's not a great offensive player, but he's very shifty and low to the ground. I thought Clax did a nice job on him. Brogdon even had a couple nice possessions on Sabonis. Just the difference between Claxton and DeAndre Jordan this game, Jack, really was so huge. Like, the gap was just there, and that was maybe even the difference in the game, and you kind of see some of that with a plus-minus.
It's not in day, Nick. Nicholas Claxton, 23 minutes, 5 of 10 from the field, had 8 boards, plus 24, 11 points, 2 blocks as well. DeAndre Jordan in 20 minutes, 5 of 5 from the field, did have 10 points, but only the 5 boards and minus 16 in those minutes that he was out there. And my heart was torn when you posted that clip of him locking up Caris LeVert. I'm loving the chemistry that Clax and James Harden are building together. Seems to me that James Harden loves developing young bigs under his own tutelage and turning them into goddamn superstars, a la Clint Capella style. It's something that we're incredibly lucky to have this at our hands now, Nick, because if there was no Claxton, then the Nets would be struggling in a lot of respects with their big man rotation. And there are the rumors that we've chatted about before about adding, you know, an Andre Drummond, adding a JaVale McGee and such. But Claxton gives you a differentiation with the skill set he does provide. And was this his best game defensively, Nick? Because we've seen spurts, and we did finally see him crack that 20-minute mark, which is something we wanted to see. And as he did mention what's popping, which is just goddamn awesome. We can't love this kid more than anyone else. But also Steve Nash made a really sort of salient point that we've sort of talked about. It's about maintaining the balance. We don't want to overextend him. And you can see him still at moments getting gassed, because what he does do in terms of the versatility and his individual skill set requires a level of exertion that DeAndre Jordan, he could play 40 minutes in his game because he's just standing there and but stationary, whereas Clax is moving so many parts of his body. 20 minutes for him is like 60 minutes on a DJ game.
Yeah, it's really high energy, especially the mobility and the, you know, movement of his feet, especially when he's sliding, trying to, you know, defend these guards in space, like you said. And the effort level is there because you also see him sprinting in transition. But I want to touch on a point that you mentioned before, Jack. His chemistry with James Harden is really improving. I think there was a play in this game. I posted a clip on my Twitter. It just looks like a basic oop, but you see him reading Sabonis, and he's like, oh, Sabonis is going to shift over here to help on James Harden. Let me get to the other side of the rim, give Harden the option to throw me the oop. There we go. When early on we saw plays with Claxton where it got a little congested in the paint because he wasn't really sure where to go with James Harden or Kyrie Irving, now he's starting to get a feel for that situation. Then obviously, if you sprint in transition, you're going to get buckets. And Nick Claxton, honestly, might be the fastest center in the NBA.
There's part of me wants to argue with you, but I'm not arguing with you, man.
Noel would be a guy that I think is really fast as well. He doesn't necessarily sprint as much, but I'm trying to think of centers that would really be faster than Nick Claxton.
Bam has some speed, but it seems more that I would trust his more endurance and Claxton's quickness. And it's because, like, you know, he's just, look, our superstar on our team coined the word unicorn with so many different big men, with Kristaps Porzingis and such. We might have one in ourselves. I mean, he's a goat, he's a unicorn, he's some type of farm animal that is just so damn unique, Nick. And I want to ask you, what was your favorite
farm animal? That so damn unique.
Don't mean to be derogatory. I mean, unicorns are clearly farm animals in fantastical lands and fantasy lands. What was your favorite play from him tonight, Nick? Was it a defensive play? That block on Sabonis was nasty. You alluded to like his quickness and speed there. That recovery speed. Oh my God, he's turning into like Kyrie Irving on the defensive end with the amount of highlights that he's giving us.
Yeah, he's like a defensive unicorn to an extent in the way that he's playing because of the switchability, because of the shot blocking. But that was probably my favorite play, the block on Sabonis, because we haven't necessarily seen a lot of the center traits. You know, we've kind of talked about that a few episodes ago. We've seen a lot of the on-ball defense, but some of the center stuff, the shot blocking, the weak side rim protection hasn't fully been there. So those type of plays always pop. And like you said, he really came out of nowhere. Sabonis thought he had an easy layup. He didn't even see Claxton coming, and he sent that. And great hustle play by James Harden for saving the ball.
I think, yeah, and look, again, James Harden, Nicholas Claxton, and we'll get to James Harden in a little bit. Don't worry about that. But Nicholas Claxton seemed to play a more pure center role within his own skill set as well. He still showed the versatility to be able to get out on the perimeter, but then added those center skills that we know he does have. It's not as strong a suit as like a Rudy Gobert or a Jonas Valanciunas, or these sort of like prototypical rim-protecting centers and offensive centers. But he's rebounding today, Nick. You know, those offensive boards as well. I think that's just an easy differentiator. If Claxton's getting those boards and showing the aggression, showing the athleticism there, sort of what we sort of saw in the growth from Jared Allen, that's when you know it's just like, man, this guy's going to be an amazing center for many years to come.
Yeah, Jack, there was a play in this game where he used his speed to get, you know, essentially a hustle rebound. You know, it's one of those rebounds that kind of just bounces. No one's there. It's a loose ball. He got there before Sabonis, again, using that athleticism and also just using that hustle, that high energy. Like, he always wants the ball. He's just like a pure baller. Like, there's just some people who just, like, play to win the game all the time. And, like, every single minute and second of the game matters to the highest extent to them. And Claxton's one of those guys. Like, you can just tell he wants to win. And he's also used to being a bigger part of teams. So I think, like, any opportunity he has to touch the ball, like, he's going to try to capitalize on that. And obviously he still plays within his role, but like when he can, he's going to grab that thing.
Yeah, you look, you're confident whenever the ball is near him. You know, a lot of centers, it's just like you want them finishing the plays, whereas Claxton can create plays. He can be a part of plays. He can, you know, dish the ball out. He's just cohesive and such an anomaly in terms of the position that he does play at. And a lot of that does go to his college experience and such. But Nick, going forward, we sort of talked about the balance in not overextending a Nicholas Claxton, as Steve Nash alluded to, which is, as much as we want to see Nicholas Claxton play 30, 35 minutes a night, I don't think he's at that point yet. How do you think it sort of pans out, and how do you think that Steve Nash does ramp it up while also not going too far with Claxton and sort of being like, okay, give him 30 minutes, but he ain't ready for that yet because he might turn into a net negative in certain respects because of the energy that he does use?
Yeah, and I think also he's still a little undersized to bang with guys. You know what I mean? Like Sabonis, if he had to deal with him for this full game, I think maybe we'd be looking at it a little bit differently just because he's a physical presence. Claxton doesn't necessarily have that in his game. I mean, Jack, I'm not really sure you want to play Claxton 30 minutes this season. Like, there's still some concern him coming back from injury. You have different options out there. Maybe you set the cap at like 25, 28. He has dealt with a couple things in these, you know, this season and a half. So you want him to be 100% for the playoffs because he's going to be a real tool. Like, I knew that he had potential to be this tool, but I am 100% confident at this point in time that he will get playoff minutes and he will have impact in a playoff series because not only of his, you know, offensive game that he has with that lob threat with James Harden, but defensively, you know, I think he might be the Nets' best defender.
I mean, yeah, it's Jeff Green, it's Kevin Durant, it's Nicholas Claxton, and
pure talent. Like, he's not there from the fundamental standpoint, and, you know, like, Jeff Green and Kevin Durant obviously have those reps, but in terms of just, like, pure talent and potential on that end of the floor, like, this has just been really fun to watch. I mean, I get, like, literally a little bit of Jonathan Isaac vibes.
And, look, Jonathan Isaac is a perennial, and will always be a perennial all-defensive candidate, and Nick Claxton's putting himself in that conversation with the versatility that he does have and the talent to do so many things on the defensive side of the floor. It's like a... Look, I'm not comparing him to one of the best defensive players in the game, Ben Simmons, but a part of me is because Ben Simmons can do so much in guarding so many different positions, but Nick Claxton can also rim protect, so he can't necessarily maybe do as much as Ben Simmons can. I think Ben Simmons has better physicality than Nick Claxton does, but I think that's going to improve for him as well. This is, at this point in time, Nick, this is like... You know, you love the Dragon Ball Z. I love Dragon Ball Z. This is like version one of Cell. We ain't even at perfect Cell version yet. And like, we're getting Gohan Super Saiyan 2 versions of Nicholas Claxton in spurts and in games. And man, it's goddamn it as exciting. I put about like 8 tweets tonight about Nicholas Claxton because there's just something about him that just excites me and excites Nets fans. And it's just intangible. It makes the viewing experience awesome. And you know, whenever he's out there, you know something's going to happen.
Yeah, and to be honest, you're not supposed to have players like him on a team like this. Like, you just don't have this type of talent, like young talent on a team when you have three superstars in James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. Like, this is a guy that's always in the trade. And we brought it up. You brought it up a couple episodes ago. Did the Nets dodge a bullet with Nick Claxton not playing early in the year? They really did because there's no way he's not included in a James Harden trade. So it was just kind of a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, it's sometimes to win championships, to build foundations, you've got to have luck along the way. You know, you get your Bruce Browns, you keep your Nicholas Claxtons, all these different things. You know, you look at the previous iterations of championship teams. The Golden State Warriors don't get Kevin Durant unless Stephen Curry's ankles aren't shot to shit in the early points of his.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So maybe Nicholas Claxton is our point of differentiation where it's just like, man, they shouldn't have him. They're lucky. And it's like Golden State, they shouldn't have Kevin Durant. They're lucky to have him. It couldn't. I'm not saying, again, I'm making a lot of outlandish comparisons tonight, but Nick Claxton has me feeling that way, Nick, and we could talk about him for the entire episode, but we probably should talk about...
I just
want
to say one more thing, Jack, and I know like we try to just focus on the one game, but I think just like moving forward, there's so much excitement because obviously Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden are going to be here next year. Like, what is the jump that Nick Claxton's going to make in this offseason? Like, it could be really something incredible, and it could be just adding a huge piece to this team. But like you said, Jack, let's talk James Harden, who was an MVP tonight.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Absolute MVP, Nick. He just keeps just impacting and winning and getting triple-doubles. It's just like, he's like Russell Westbrook, but an impactful version of it, and... He's already like got more, or he doesn't already, but he's like a triple-double away from tying Jason Kidd's record in the space of like 25, 30 games in the one franchise. 40 points, 13 of 27 from the field, got to the line a lot. Old school James Harden, 12 of 14 from there, 15 dimes, 10 boards, 2 steals, only 2 turnovers. I thought he was better in that, and we sort of said in previous games he had like 6 or 7 and such, so I think his control of the game and steadiness was much better there. Also led the team in plus-minus, plus 25. If James Harden isn't top 3 in the MVP, now, this is me being objective, he should be around LeBron, Embiid, Jokic. If he's not in that top 3, top 4 conversation, then you haven't watched Brooklyn Nets basketball. It's just plain and simple.
Yeah, it really is. And obviously, Embiid dealing with the injury, that could kind of help James Harden's case. The Denver Nuggets not winning enough games, that could help James Harden's case. I think LeBron right now is probably his main competition, especially with Anthony Davis being out. But these type of games really help your MVP resume. You know what I mean? A 40-point triple-double when your other star is out and, oh yeah, that guy Kevin Durant is out too, and you still beat a solid Pacers team. I know their record's not amazing, but they've been playing a little bit better late with Caris LeVert coming back. So this is just really incredible stuff, and it's also to the point where there really was no other playmaker on the Nets tonight. Like, nobody else was creating for others. It was a lot of just James Harden, you're going to have to do everything tonight, and he did. He did it for 42 minutes of this game. I mean, the guy sat for literally 5 minutes and 53 seconds. Like, he put the team on his back and got the dub in a comeback fashion. It's just as incredible to watch, and like you kind of pointed out, Jack, he's just constantly making guys better and taking their game to the next level.
Where does his durability and consistency rank, Nick, in terms of players in the league, in terms of his individual skills? Because I don't think that there is a more consistently durable and productive player that we have seen in the modern era. And this is going back to the Houston Rockets, where he'd be playing, he'd lead in the league in minutes, getting triple-doubles, you know, getting 10 threes a night. And it's just, it's incredible because we saw it from afar. Now we're seeing it up close, and it's just like we should have known it. And it's just like it's the same things happening again. But you can't help but just once you're seeing it in person, up night after night after night, the durability is just something that amazes me.
Yeah, I really want to knock on wood very loudly right now, but my dog's going to bark, so I'll just do a little slight one for you. Jack's got me covered over there. I mean, it's LeBron-esque, right? LeBron's the only other player I can think of that constantly carries teams on a regular basis and doesn't miss games and puts up great production. There's really not any other player in the NBA that's done at this level this consistently other than LeBron James, and James Harden has been right behind him the last couple of years. Obviously, it hasn't maintained during the postseason, but in terms of regular season success, James Harden has been right there constantly being, you know, arguably the best player in the NBA the last few seasons.
This is what MVPs do, Nick. You know, when the chips are down and the odds are against you, you don't have two of your three best players and, you know, you're coming back from a 15-point lead. It's not as great as the Phoenix Suns performance because that was just something that was going to go down in history and in our memories as one of the best performances by an individual like Brooklyn then ever. But his ability to be like, you know what? Most guys would be like, okay, I'll sit it out. I'll get my 30 minutes tonight. This is the night I get my rest. Whereas James Harden's like, nah, give me 42 minutes. I'm bringing this team back. I'm getting them on my shoulders. Nick Claxton's going to hit a heap of shots. Jeff Green's going to hit his shots. And Tyler Johnson's going to be a nice little running mate for me to get us back in this game because, man, I can't marvel enough about, I think he's improved leadership, Nick. I think Brooklyn is giving him that opportunity to showcase his leadership in a way that, in a different way to what he did show in Houston.
Yeah, and I think also it's just being showcased a little bit more. You know, you've heard some media people talk about like, hey, James was doing this stuff in Houston, but guys weren't really talking about it, or they were just kind of showcasing more of the negative aspects. And I also just think the mesh of leadership from all three guys between Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and James Harden is almost a perfect fit. And it's so funny as that was the biggest concern of so many different people going to the trade. And I'm not saying they were wrong to have that concern. It's just like it's been the complete opposite. It's like they're almost a perfect fit. James Harden's happy being vocal and talking about guys and calling each other out. Kyrie's kind of more of that in between. And KD almost kind of minds his own business. But when he does talk, everybody listens. And I think that's kind of a perfect role for James Harden, KD, and Kyrie.
Yeah, there's this symbiosis, not to go all fancy teacher on everyone right now, but there is a chemistry and synergy between those three leading this team. And, you know, if you want a perfect example of it, the last game against the Detroit Pistons, Kyrie Irving's given DJ the biggest hug in the world, and then he moves five steps later, he's talking to James Harden. James Harden's like, okay, you got to move here or else you're not going to be able to get to that shot or whatever. And it's just like, that is, if you want to have a perfect example of the Brooklyn Nets leadership style and how it's sort of been happening with our superstars, that's it right there. All of these guys are being productive and allowed to flourish because they're bringing their individualness and their individual style, leadership, playing, and just personality on this team. And everything is just working around them, and it's just fitting in like a glove.
And it seems like they really like each other. Like they're actually friends. You know what I mean? And I think that's an underrated aspect. You know, not to talk about another Eastern Conference team, but there's been so much talk between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Like they don't not like each other, but they're not great friends. And there's been talk about that maybe being part of the issue in Philadelphia. I'm not saying it is, but that's just something to consider there. But getting
they
back to James,
they haven't lived together, I think, recently, which is probably them trying to go.
I think that was a joke, Jack. I think that was a joke.
Oh, my bad. But I think what you're saying in that sense is because it all seems natural right now in this Nets team. It's just like, there's this flow, there's this energy, there's this intangible nature to the Brooklyn Nets team that is what is starting to form the habits and what's making them such a team that everyone wants to watch and everyone is salivating over because James Harden does his thing and Joe Harris is doing his thing, Clax is doing his thing, Tyler Johnson, what's popping with him as well, up coming off the bench and stuff. Man, we need to get Jack Harlow. Jack Harlow's more of a Miami Heat fan. He's talking about Tyler Hero and stuff, but man, if he starts watching the real Tyler TJ, maybe he might switch allegiances, but Nick, I can't say enough good things about how James Harden. We don't, as much as I love Caris LeVert, and it was just so goddamn weird seeing Cornrow Caris in the pinstripes tonight. If you do the trade a million times out of a million, despite my hesitancy initially as well. James Harden is just—he's a one-man wrecking ball. This is like the Houston Rockets version of James Harden, where he's just like, I can win any game, any regular season game, no matter what it is. And that helps you because you win and you breathe this energy, you breathe this enthusiasm, you breathe this desire to not want to lose again. And the Nets have won 14 of 15 And that is absolutely goddamn incredible, because one of those games we had Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving's missed games here and there. So a lot of the brunt of that responsibility has been on James Harden, and he has relished it and then some.
Yeah, he really has, Jack. And just kind of talking about another aspect of his game, I think his ability to read the defense and understand how they're going to play him in certain situations is huge. You know what I mean? And also that chemistry with Jeff Green, I think that's an underrated aspect, especially in games like tonight. We saw that combination have a lot of success in the fourth quarter. You know, they doubled James Harden. Okay, I'm going to hit Jeff Green on the short roll, and he's going to try to murder Sabonis every single play. So that type of chemistry and that juice, and then you saw them roll out the inverted pick and roll, where Jeff Green would use Harden as a pick to get the switch that they wanted. So that chemistry, that cohesion, I think that's an underrated aspect. And we talked about this a lot in the offseason when the Harden trade happened. There's so many different connections on this team. You know what I mean? Between Kyrie and Kevin Durant, between James Harden and Kevin Durant, between James Harden and Mike D'Antoni, James Harden and Jeff Green and Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? It's almost like a spider web of all these different relationships.
Definitely. And look, Jeff Green was in his bag tonight, man. And yep, despite having that little bit of a sore shoulder, you know, he did get to the line. He was still incredibly aggressive. Didn't take the threes, but he didn't need to, because he had 15 points, 9 boards and 3 assists, and in only 30 minutes. I like that number for him. I don't want him to be overexerting himself, because I mean, I'd love it to be about that 25-28 range, but hopefully when we get another center in here and KD comes back, we can lessen his load a little bit too. But yeah, he was just in his bag tonight. There was just some nights where it's just like, wait, are you James Harden right now? With little thugs like that behind the back dribble and stuff. I was just like, Uncle Jeff's got some moves. He's got a bag, dude.
Yeah, he really does. I mean, again, you know, the vet minimum signing, this guy has been excellent for the Nets. I think also from a leadership perspective, we talked about James Harden. I think everybody really respects Jeff Green. I think he's also a big factor out there in terms of communication defensively. Obviously, we're not at the game, so we can't necessarily know for a fact, but it just seems like the defense is better when he's out there, especially in terms of switching. He also sees like, hey, shit, Tyler Johnson has Sabonis in the post. Let me switch that real quick before they attack that mismatch. And I think Jeff Green has been really good at kind of just helping the entire Nets defense be better at times.
He's such an important part to what the Brooklyn Nets do, especially defensively. Yes, he's an important offensive weapon, and you know his intelligence and just ability to manipulate angles and just know what plays need to be run. And like you mentioned, his chemistry with just players across the floor, he just slots in perfectly no matter where he is. So
yep,
can't say enough good things about what Jeff Green does. And in saying that, I also love the chemistry between Joe Harris and James Harden. And those guys haven't even played together before.
Yeah, no, there is some great chemistry there. I think he understands, like, hey, Joe is an elite three-point shooter. He's going to help me, you know, open up space for myself, and then he's going to create, you know, winning plays for this team. And Joe hit some big shots in this game. I thought he played some solid defense in this one, too. I really liked the way he played. I thought, you know, he hasn't necessarily – I don't think he was great in probably the last two games, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a good matchup for him, I think, Nick, defensively, this Pacers team.
Yeah, it's also because, like, they don't really have a ton of attackers or, like, slashers that really can exploit you. Like, Karras is probably their best one, and he's not 100% right now. And Malcolm Brogdon's a little bit slower, and I think Joe's okay with that because he can match that physicality, and I also think they're boys, so he has a little extra going against him. So that always helps, too. But really like what Joe played tonight. I thought, you know, the team needed somebody to really step up, and he was one of the guys that did.
Oh, man. And it started all pregame when we saw our two favorite players connecting at the tip and Joe Harris just giving him a little nudge like, yep, what's up, my guy? And, oh, man, my heart exploded. I don't know how I can deal with that. I think that's going to be – it's a gift that I love and I love to hate at the same time.
It was bittersweet.
It's bittersweet. It's a really good way to put it. But, yeah, that clutch three at the end of the third, was it, Nick?
Yeah, he had one in the third. He had some in the fourth. There was just I just felt like every shot Joe Harris hit in the second half was meaningful because it was a close game, and the Nets were constantly trying to come back. It was 2 points, 6 points, 8 points, then back to four, then back to two, and then the Nets finally got over the hump, and Joe Harris was a big part of that. 36 minutes, yeah, almost 37 minutes tonight.
Yeah, and look, 19 points for him, 4 boards, had a dime, had a steal, 5 of 7 from 3, so, you know, an absolute flamethrower, getting back to his absolutely dominant form from there, 7-11 from the field. And a big reason why the Nets were able to outscore the Pacers 66-54 in the second half, including 35-24 in that final quarter, where I thought the defense did click up a little bit. And, you know, you saw guys like Claxton, Jeff Green, Joe Harris, and that lineup with James Harden as well, it just all fits absolutely seamlessly. And man, Joe is just so goddamn reliable. Even like you alluded to, the Pistons aren't a great matchup for him, and it's not to say that the Pistons are an amazing team, but they just have a heap of athletes and a heap of quickness about them, a heap of length, which would disrupt anyone, let alone a guy like Joe Harris, who doesn't have those physical gifts like a Nicholas Claxton, like a Jeff Green, and like the Kevin Durant does have. So, look, other than James Harden, he played the most minutes, and the reason why he did was because he was that goddamn important.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup of Tyler Johnson, James Harden, Joe Harris, Nicholas Claxton, and Jeff Green, that was the best lineup tonight. And it just makes sense. Like, if you thought about that lineup, putting it out there in 2K, if you're playing, you're like, oh, this lineup's probably going to pop off a little bit. There's some spacing here. There's some versatility. There's a switching if. We have some hustle players in here. I thought Tyler Johnson also played a really good game tonight. I really love the energy he provides. He's like a less annoying version of TJ McConnell. And he can shoot the three.
Yeah, and he's a more athletic. I think both of those guys are important cogs to what you need on solid, successful teams. You need just roll guys, glue guys. Shout out to those who are doing some awesome podcasts, including so damn jealous about getting Bruce Brown on the pod. Bruce, open BBB. You know, that's going to make an awesome episode, mate.
We'll
change the name of this goddamn podcast. We'll name it after you if you come on, my guy. But in saying that, on Tyler Johnson, Nick, the hair's looking great. His game's looking even better because what he's doing right now for this team is, I said in previous episodes, in the last one, the previous one before that, it's just like, look beyond the box score when you're watching Tyler Johnson play. Tonight, you look at the box score and it looks pretty goddamn nice. 15 points, 4 boards, 2 steals, at 5 or 6 from the line, 2 or 6 from free, 4 or 9 from the field. He is just a really good fifth guy to have, you know, in whatever lineup it is, because he gives you little spurts of everything. A little bit of shooting, a little bit of secondary playmaking, a little bit of athleticism, a little bit of pesky defense. He just does a lot, and I know it started in the bubble, and thank God that Sean Marks is in love with Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, really, because he's been a great, you know, part of this team. And he, like you said, Jack Heber just provides that element that they kind of miss sometimes, just that little energy boost. And also, I give him a lot of credit because he's willing to bang with bigs down low, and he's not a big guy. He's might be the smallest guy in the Nets other than Chris Chioza. Like, and he'll battle with Tyler Johnson. He'll battle with Sabonis. He'll stick his head in there, take some mean shots during the game, get the deflections that your team needs. So a lot of respect for Tyler Johnson and what he does. Obviously, when guys are back, he might be out of the rotation, but he's always somebody good to have when you need that energy boost.
Yeah, and look, he's fighting, and I think that's what he's fighting to earn those minutes, because you know he's going to be fighting Landry Shamet, Bruce Brown, those sort of guys.
He was better than Shamet tonight.
He was better than Shamet tonight. He was better than Bruce Brown tonight. Yep. He was certainly better than TLC tonight. And I don't know how much we want to talk about the negatives, Nick, but you know, Landry Shamet, I think it was just an off game for him, despite starting. He did deserve the start given his recent form. Bruce Brown, we've already talked a little bit about. But TLC, man, I don't know how you are minus 17 in 7 minutes. God.
Yo, Jack, we tried to be nice in the last show. We're like, you know, maybe TLC is a little undervalued, but, you know, I understand why Nets fans were upset tonight. It was some of the worst minutes I've seen him play in his entire career. And I don't know if he's injured, he's rusty, he's out of his funk, but just there was one play where he was trying to dribble the basketball, and I'm not an elite basketball player. I'm not going to sit here and say that I am, but I would have been able to handle the ball a lot better in that situation. It's just some things are just really confusing. Like, I just don't know what's clicking in his head at times and what he's doing. So hopefully he can get it back together. I almost want him to, like, go down to the G League and play a couple games. I don't know if that's even allowed, but he needs to get his rhythm right.
Yeah, look, I put out on Twitter and I got flamed for it. And, you know, I'll happily eat my own words in terms of saying that, like, you know, he's not as bad as everyone thinks. And tonight he was. Tonight he was
worse
maybe,
than what everyone thinks tonight.
He was worse, Nick. And I do like the fact that Steve Nash was like, nah, you're not playing here, mate. You know, he was that bad in the first quarter. And a big reason why we were so down after that first period. And, you know, it now I think Playboy Claxton or someone on Nets Twitter puts out every single time we see TLC play 10 minutes or less, the Nets are like 11-0 or something. Mm-hmm. So that adds to the stat. And look, part of me just wants TLC to get this back. Not just for the naysayers, but because I believe in what he is. I believe in the prototype of what TLC is. A guy who has some defensive chops. A guy who can hit a three ball. But it's all the other things that he does that it's just like, no, we don't need you to do that. We have all these other players that can do those things. Stick to what you look, not to be like High School Musical here and stick to what you know, but we don't need him to do all the other little things, Nick, because we have so many other players that can do what he needs. You know, just take a leaf out of Bruce Brown and Tyler Johnson and Landry Shamet's ball. They are role players, and you are a role player as well, TLC. If you maintain your ability to play your role, as he has done in maybe 4 or 5 games this season, You will get minutes. Don't extend yourself, my guy.
Yeah, I think really what he has to do is just play really high-energy defense without fouling, rebound the basketball, shoot open threes, run in transition, and pretty much never dribble the basketball. Just he just really struggles with that. I'm not sure. Maybe he needs a whole offseason of handles, but right now he just that aspect of his game is not there.
It's just not. And look, I don't want to keep dumping and shitting on him because I want him to get back. And we're not those type of guys to sort of...
And I think there is a potential for him to have some type of positive impact if he can get back to that. And I don't know how much is the injury. I don't think he's been moving super well out there either. So that could be part of it. But talking about another guy who didn't play well tonight, we kind of mentioned him earlier on. DeAndre Jordan just was moving slow. His switches weren't there. He just... It just was in a funk. I don't know if, like, DJ, after he plays a lot of minutes, the next game it almost feels like the Nets should arrest him because part of me wanted to see Reggie Perry out there instead at different points.
Dude, he was playing, like, he played, like, all of the first quarter, didn't he, Nelly?
I don't understand that. Like, I get it that, like, you want to give somebody rhythm, but DJ is what? He's, like, 33 up there in age, has plenty of mileage on those legs. Not super athletic, and I think it also hurts Nick Claxton at times just because then you're expecting Claxton to do the same thing, and I think any center playing a full quarter is tough. Like, you typically just don't play players full quarters unless they're superstars and it's a postseason game, so that's an interesting thing that Steve Nash does. I don't know if DJ prefers it that way, but I don't really understand it myself.
Yeah, he played more minutes in the first quarter than he did for the rest of the game, the other three quarters combined, and it's the first game that we saw Nicholas Claxton beat him in the amount of minutes played. Is that a trend going forward? I don't know. I think it'll depend on form, and I think Steve Nash needs to be a little bit quicker in his ability to go, okay, DeAndre, we don't need to play you 12 minutes in this opening period when we're down 15. And it, in all honesty, Nick, I think it's on paper, the Sabonis and Turner sort of matchup should suit him, but it just didn't.
Yeah, it was just like the Nets were kind of unsure what to do, and I think the Pacers did a good job of kind of exploiting it and understanding the Nets were going to switch and putting him in some weird situations. And just like, you know, sometimes his lack of engagement can be tough on the team, but like you mentioned, you know, I think one struggle that Steve Nash does have is he'll stick with lineups a little bit too long. Like, I could have told you after the first quarter the starting lineup was not good tonight. It was not having success. The Pacers were able to exploit it. So why go to that same starting lineup in the third quarter and then go to it for, you know, 6 to 8 minutes instead of swapping out early and understanding, like, hey, I need to make a change. Part of me felt like Steve Nash was almost just trying to grind out these minutes because he knew that this lineup wouldn't work and he couldn't play these players, and maybe he was trying to save them for the fourth. I'm not really sure, but it was just kind of weird minute management and lack of adjustment. But he adjusted later on, just I would have liked it a little sooner.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, you don't want to – it's anyone's guess why. I think it's more just Steve Nash has a general trust and desire in his players to want to work through their inconsistencies. But, you know, it comes a point where it's just like, come on, man, the leash can't be that long for guys like DeAndre Jordan, TLC, et cetera. So, you know, minus 16 for DeAndre Jordan in his 20 minutes. You know, you take out the minus 16 from DJ, the minus 17 from TLC, the minus 12 from Bruce Brown, minus 14 from Landry Shamet, and the exceptional plus-minus numbers from the guys that we've talked about, Nick, are just are crazy. And if you had have given... Nicholas Claxton, but it's almost like he probably played the maximum amount of minutes you would want to give to Tyler Johnson, to Nicholas Claxton, to Jeff Green, to Joe Harrison, to James Harden. It's just like, when are you ever going to play Joe Harrison more than 35 minutes? James Harden, 42 minutes after the amount of minutes he's been playing is exceptional. Jeff Green's obviously working through his shoulder injury, so giving him more than 30 minutes doesn't make sense. We've heard it. We talked about Claxton's minute management. And Tyler Johnson, I can't remember the last time he played 30 minutes or more. I think it's only been once or twice, maybe
the Phoenix
three times
Suns
this
game.
Yeah, and obviously we saw what happened there, a bit of a carbon copy. So I think that it was just trying to get the you know, you're squeezing the orange as much as you can out of it, and it's just like you keep squeezing, trying to get a little bit of juice out of it until there's nothing left apart from those goddamn seeds. And I mean, ultimately, we got the win, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I think you're trying to steal minutes sometimes. And I obviously, as a fan, it's hard to know, or even as like media or anything, understanding what the coach is thinking in the situation and who he wants to play and who he doesn't want to play. But I think just it was night and day, especially defensively with Claxton and Jeff Green on the floor in comparison to Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan, which isn't super surprising, but just to the extent in which it was, because we saw the Pacers score 40 points in the first quarter, second quarter only 21, third quarter 30 points, and then fourth quarter 24. And funny enough, who played majority minutes in the second and fourth quarter? Claxton and Green.
Yeah, they're as a defensive duo and an offensive duo for that matter. Yeah. They give us a lot, so it'll be nice to add in Kevin Durant for the next part of the season whenever he is back. Obviously, in the next couple of weeks, we heard Steve Nash allude to that, so hopefully those are positive signs. We are getting some timelines surrounding him, Nick. One thing I'm surprised about, Nick, I'm looking a bit at the box score numbers for the team stats, and the Nets destroyed on the boards 50-34. In that first quarter, I think it was something like, 18 to like 10 or something like that.
Yeah, I think also some of that first quarter too, Jack, was offensively the Nets were missing a lot of shots, and it was kind of a little bit of math, and then they started getting back to their normal numbers, made it a little tougher on the Pacers. But I believe the Nets had 15 offensive boards in this game, and the Pacers only had four. Which is kind of surprising.
It's something that we've probably talked about on the opposing side, and it hurts the Brooklyn Nets in a lot of respects if they're not taking care of the defensive glass. And the offensive glass is, I mean, out of the amount of games, the 41 games that we've played this season, I would assume that the Nets have lost the offensive glass at least 20-plus out of those games. So it was a nice sign, and I think it comes from guys like, Nicholas Claxton, James Harden was decent there as well. A lot of these other guys. It seemed there was a lot of good team offensive boards. And, off misses five for Jeff Green, five offensive boards for Jeff Green. So I think it was just a by committee sort of thing, Nick. And I think Landry Shamet got a cheeky little one as well to get some points on the board for him. So I think that the mentality to crash the glass was something that was done really well tonight.
Yeah, and I thought a lot of them, too, were just some of those loose ball offensive rebounds, the ones that kind of take the weird bounce and, like, anybody can get it. And the Nets got a lot of those tonight. And I think also the Pacers, looking at the advanced stats, are 26th in the league in rebound percentage, which is kind of surprising since they do typically play, a traditional front court. But Miles Turner was in foul trouble in this game, and he just played pretty poorly.
And look, it worked into the Nets' favor because I got flamed calling Jared Allen the best pure shot blocker in the league, and I had about a million Pacers fans jumping on my mentions about Miles Turner, including Full Access Pacers' very own Corey Waldron. I do get it. I know that Miles Turner is an amazing shot blocker and one of the best
in the
league.
Wasn't tonight.
But he was not tonight, and I think the Nets did a really good job of attacking the paint and showing purpose in their offense, and James Harden really led the way in that, and his three ball wasn't falling, only 2 of 9 from there. I have confidence that he will get into some sort of rhythm. I think some of it is tiredness, but the shots that he did take from there looked quite smooth, so I think he's going to get that back for him. But yeah, I thought the purpose and aggression to sort of make the Pacers defend in the final three quarters, because you have your first quarter 25 points, then you have 33, 31, and 35. I think it was just one bad quarter, Nick, and good teams just put that behind them, and they bounced back in a big way.
Yeah, and they really did that tonight. And I also think, Jack, it was just kind of similar to the way they won the Phoenix Suns game and just kind of showcasing like, hey, we can grind out games. Like if our offense isn't straight cooking all the time, we can lock it up defensively and play really well. Because I want to say from the first quarter on, the Nets outscored them 99-75 or something like that. So that's impressive stuff.
Yeah, it certainly is, Nick. And look, I'm really happy the way this team is playing going forward. We maintain these habits, and we might snag that one seed if the Sixers actually could goddamn lose a game.
Yeah, they lost tonight, so we're tied for that one seed right now, and the Nets are on a 6-game winning streak. And like we've mentioned before, Joel Embiid is out. Obviously, we wish him a speedy recovery because you always want to beat the best teams, but wouldn't be surprised if Philadelphia dropped a couple games. I thought Milwaukee actually looked pretty good against Philadelphia in that second half tonight, so it'll be an interesting race for that one seed throughout the rest of the season. But Jack, always a pleasure, and big thanks everybody for listening.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.